You can't start the car. Johnny has the keys.
Hello, hello, hello out there in podcast and YouTube land. Welcome to Johnny Has the Keys, where we talk about horror movies and science fiction films and those key elements that lift them above the average genre fare. Are you new? What's the deal? Where you been? I mean, we've been doing this for what? Almost 150 episodes. We have about 3 satellite shows, a Patreon channel. Well, if you're new, we're glad you're here. And we hope you find something that you may like, because we've got a lot to offer. And for those of you returning, well, welcome back. You know what's going on, and we appreciate you being here as well. I am here with my co-host and good friend, David Horton. David, how are you doing?
I am well, although somewhat depressed because of my genre week. Yes. I know I'm getting the reputation of the old guy that stands on his lawn and says, "Stop it! Get off! I didn't like this." But I just finished what I have said several times is the best, probably original season of a series in history, which is Westworld.
Rewatched the first season?
No, I've finally finished the last season.
Oh, okay. Is it the series finale or just the season finale?
I think it's in my opinion, please God, let it be the series finale. But I think here's what I think happened. I think the last like 4-minute tag in the season finale of season 4 was added on by Joy and Nolan to kind of wrap everything up. Because they still haven't heard from HBO. HBO is doing through all, you know, this is an HBO original series. It's been bought out, and Discovery is already destroying a bunch of projects that they have. You know, they canceled, you know, Batman and a bunch of other stuff, or Catwoman, and a bunch of other stuff has been put on hold. So I don't think they're going to get a 5th season. I certainly hope not. I think, especially if season 4 is any indication. Because it was terrible and not good. And I kept sitting on the edge of my seat every week going, "It'll get better. They're just setting something up." And no, they didn't. Okay, well, I know what the thing about Westworld that was so incredible about the first season was it constantly, every episode, confused you, frustrated mm-hmm. you, but also then twisted stuff around so it made sense. At the end of it, you're going, reveal. Oh, that reveal works towards episode 1 where this mm-hmm. happened. Or, oh, so it was a very great puzzle box story. And you and I have talked about how we both love puzzle box stories when they're done right. When they're done wrong, like Lost, not a good idea. And this is what happened to this. I would equate this as Lost meets Game of Thrones final season. Season 4 was not very good. I'm not an Aaron Paul fan. I've gone on record saying it. I still haven't watched Breaking Bad, so maybe I'll change. But even reviews that I've read say he's the same character only in Westworld. And I went, oh, okay. Well, then I wouldn't like him in Breaking Bad.
Breaking Bad was like the first time he was known for it.
Right.
So at the time it was new, but now he's just retreading, I guess.
That's the impression I get from people online who are talking about this particular finale sort of thing.
And he's also secondary in Breaking Bad. He's in it a good bit, but there are sometimes when he's not in an episode.
Well, yeah. He's supposed to be secondary in Westworld, but the past 2 years, seasons 3 and season 4, they've tried to make him the lead, but then not done anything with him. Right. And they've made these huge narrative decisions that don't make sense. It's like if you decided to, you know, it's like they, because, you know, Jonah Nolan and Joy, his wife, wrote, directed, crafted, showran the first season and parts of season 2.
How is he related to Christopher Nolan?
He's his brother. They're brothers.
I thought that his name was something different.
Well, he goes by Jonah, and she and Joy calls him Jonah when she talks to him. But it's actually
it's longer.
Yeah, it's Jonathan. No,
Jonathan. Okay, his name. I was like, I don't recognize that name. Is that a son? I wasn't even sure.
Correct. Okay. But both of them in interviews and in post little film snippets and documentaries and liner notes and everything else, they're very intelligent. They're very incredible. They're very big into plotting and character development and the mythos that goes under the subtext of the thematics and all that stuff that we love. And that's what the first season was. And then the second season was sort of like that, but they kind of got lost in the middle, but they fixed it by the end. And then they went off to do other projects at HBO. And they didn't showrun season three, and they didn't showrun this season.
Oh.
And it shows tremendously. Even though in each of the, how HBO does, stay after the show and watch a little featurette that's like, 3 minutes long. In every one of those, they make sure that they interview Nolan and Joy. And they're talking about, what we really wanted this year was this to happen. And I'm going, you did not, because I guarantee you had nothing to freaking do with this plotting. It just is not right. It's kind of like if you sold your book to HBO and they did Will to Live great, and then they extended it to a second season and it started with Frank coming back. And, coming back and not being a zombie and da, 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 and you're like, what? That makes no sense with what we built for the entire season.
Right.
But we're doing it because this character is popular. So we're going to bring it back. And because he's a robot, we can do anything we want. It's just, I could go on for days. Never mind. My recommendation is watch season one of Westworld and enjoy it and stop. There. Yes. Jeffrey Wright, an incredible actor. Totally misused.
I love Jeffrey Wright.
Totally misused in the past 2 years.
I have one question that may be a shining light. What are Jonah and his wife working on at HBO right now?
Totally up in the air. I have not heard. I don't know.
Some because kind they of, need to stick with it and stuff.
They've got like a three-picture deal or a three-series deal with HBO. And so they went off and did that. And hopefully it'll be brilliant and great and awesome. I really respect Jonathan Nolan. I think he's done some great work. And I liked Joy. I love the episodes that she has literally written, and the two that she directed were both really strong and really good. Mm-hmm. But
interesting.
You cannot create a puzzle box and then just make crap up because you think it'll work or people will play along and some people will. I mean, I've seen online, oh, this was the best season ever. Unfriend, don't talk to. No. No, I'm sorry. I don't do that. But it's just, my strong opinion, it is not very narrative. For a show that prides itself on narrative, it's not very narratively strong.
No, I've only seen the first season, so maybe that's a blessing.
Oh, gosh. Remember it. Ford is brilliant. Just the writing is so mythic and great. The reveals and the twists are awesome. So, yeah. There's actually two episodes in season two you might like. They're brilliant, but the rest of the other six are not.
So. Kind of like Boba Fett.
Very good comparison, actually. Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
Or, okay. What they're going to do with Mandalorian this year and just bring the baby back again. So let's do that all over again. yeah. Sorry. What about you? What have you been doing this week?
Well, in my genre week, I went to Shudder again, as I have been doing, because, they have a plethora.
I'm shocked.
Yeah, they have a plethora of horror films. And I thought, well, wouldn't it be nice if I could go back and see an old Universal movie? And I couldn't find a Universal movie on Shudder. But what I did find was something very close, which was an RKO film called White Zombie.
That's Bela Lugosi.
It's Bela Lugosi, as you can see from him staring above my left shoulder. I was confused by this movie because of many things, mostly my background in knowing these type things. It had been a long time since I'd seen it. I don't even know if I've ever seen it.
Hmm.
But I was confusing it with I Walked with a Zombie, which is Val Lewton.
Okay.
And so I was expecting to be you know, entranced with a black and white film a la Cat People.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, I got an RKO picture that came out the year after Frankenstein, where this was, I guess, Lugosi's attempt at trying to compete with Karloff, and it just does
not
work.
The sets were left over, so let's use those.
Yeah, well, it's his follow-up to Dracula, and very much like Dracula, he does a lot of staring and holding his hand out because he can mesmerize you because you're a zombie and you want to obey him.
And this is more tribal zombie, not flesh-eating zombie.
Yes, but not very politically correct in that a lot of them are clearly white people and not African-American, though they could potentially be playing African-American. I'm not so sure if it's blackface. But, like, see that guy in the bottom corner?
Yeah.
See how they make him up to look all kind of crazy?
Yeah.
But, you know, and he is a plantation worker, so I'm not sure. It's old.
It's old.
It's almost 100 years old. And I do love these movies, and we'll watch them, but this one was directed and written by people I did not know. I have the names somewhere. It was written by directed by Victor Halperin. And it was written by Garnet Weston. I would recommend it if you're a purist and want to see all of Bela Lugosi's films, or if you want to go back and watch classic films of the 1930s, classic horror films. But it's the typical, you know, damsel in distress, will she survive, let's rescue her and kill the bad guy kind of thing. So...
That pulp was what horror was in the 30s.
It was. You know? It's the formula for the films of those days. And for those of you out there that are a little more modern, it is, as David said, the traditional zombie of voodoo lore, not, you know, flesh-devouring zombies, which are vastly entertaining to me.
Well, and based on the images behind you here on YouTube, it looks like it's that high-contrast black-and-white photography, too. So
it
very
is.
Similar to Dracula. And Wolfman, that era.
But not as good as 10 to 20 years later when Val Lewton was doing it.
Right.
With Cat People. I think that's in the 40s. Yeah, it's actually in the 40s.
Yep.
So 10 years later. So it wasn't a Val Lewton film, but it was on Shudder, which is surprising because there's usually a lot of good foreign stuff on Shudder and a lot of classics on Shudder, but I don't see a lot of black and white classics, and this one was what, you know, jumped out at me. So that's what I watched on Shudder this week, and that is my genre topic.
Go Shudder. That's
and
great.
Wow, where do we segue? Horror, sci-fi. Well, we've been talking about horror and sci-fi.
Yes, we have. We usually talk about that on this show every week, horror and sci-fi. And today we're delving into both, so we get to double dip, which is ironic because it's kind of like our first episode 2, which was one of our favorite horror science fiction amalgams. We've done several others that I'm sure will come up when we talk about keys for this particular film, but we are going to get in the continuity, the singularity drive and go back to 1997. So this movie is celebrating an anniversary this year. I think 25th anniversary. But it is a little thing called Event Horizon. It was directed by Paul W.S. Anderson. It was written by Philip Eisner, stars Lawrence Fishburne, Sam Neill, Kathleen Quinlan. It's also got Richard T. Jones, Jason Isaacs.
Got that Pertwee guy that's always in stuff. Something Pertwee, P-E-R-T-W-E-E.
Yeah, Sean Pertwee.
Sean, yeah.
Yep. And basically, as a synopsis to start it off before we get into opinion, it is the year 2047. A group of astronauts are sent to investigate and salvage a long-lost starship called the Event Horizon. The ship disappeared mysteriously 7 years prior on its maiden voyage, and with its return comes even more mystery as the crew of this rescue vessel, which is the Lewis and Clark, discover the real truth behind the disappearances and something even more terrifying. The taglines are a haunted ship, a missing crew, an infinite evil. And then the other tagline, I think, from the poster was infinite evil, I think, was on the poster. Had you seen this movie before?
Oh, I've seen this movie. I want to say this is the third time. It may have been the fourth. And I was going to ask you, it came out in 1997, the same year as Contact. Which do you like better?
Oh, wow. I would have to say Contact, probably, just because.
Oh,
Contact,
I would like this.
Contact slowly holds up real. I like the aspiration in Contact better than this one. Okay. Although this is a haunted house in space movie. So, you know, it works for that level.
Yeah.
I saw this movie when it opened. I mean,
really?
In the theater, the weekend it opened. I had heard about it, and I thought, wow. And I went and saw it, and I went and saw it with Barbara. It was like one of our first dates kind of thing.
Oh, my God. She doesn't like scary movies.
No. And I went and saw it with her and a friend named Barry. All three of us left going, holy crap. And she has yet to see it again. And she brings it up constantly. Anytime I mention the word horror, she goes, that's like that movie. I hated that movie. I think that movie should burn and die and everything else. And well, it did go into a black hole in the orbit of Uranus, but, you know, whatever.
Or the orbit of Barbara.
So it was... It was not popular the weekend that we saw it. I mean, we were like the only... It was the opening weekend. There were like eight of us in the theater.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
What happened to their marketing?
As far as I know, it was confused. It was really prepped. I mean, production-wise for this, the big deal about production was the studio went to Wes Anderson and said...
Paul Anderson.
It went to Paul. Yeah, I get him confused a lot because I don't like either one of them.
And they're totally different people.
Yeah, they're totally different people, and they're both film directors. And
Paul is British. I'm not sure if Wes is. I don't think Wes is.
Probably not. He's just avant-garde and weird and everything. So the studio came to them and said, Avatar and James Cameron have pushed off. They were supposed to be released this summer. And they have been pushed back to the fall. So we need you to up your movie by 3 months and get it ready to go this summer. So normally he would have 90 days to 120 days for edit and final view. He had less than 4 weeks.
Right.
So we had to throw everything together, edit it, test audience. And test audiences hated this movie because it was... 2 hours long. He had to cut over 37 minutes, I think, out of it. Let me look at my notes and double check that.
He did cut a lot out of it, and that footage mostly has been lost, and because a lot of people are demanding. I mean, it's gained popularity since its release.
Oh, yes.
And people are demanding, like, a, what do you call it, a restored version. And he said that even if he could find the... excised footage, that it's not of quality, that he could do that, that it's like videotape quality or something.
I know a lot of the marketing going up to it was like, this is the new Alien. If you liked Alien, you'll like this, that sort of thing. And I think that led to the disappointment because it is not Alien.
Not at all.
And it is a horror movie in space. Mm-hmm. It is a haunted house sort of story because they're exploring the mysteries of this spaceship sort of thing.
Spaceship, yeah.
But it is much more Lovecraftian than Alien ever was. And I think it's much more subliminally scary. And the scares aren't paced well.
No, I can't remember when I heard about this movie. I obviously watched it on DVD.
Yep.
Or video. I think it would have been DVD because it was the late 90s. And I was probably just scanning, you know, the sections and looking for something scary or sci-fi and thought, wow, this looks really good. And then I got it and I was like, wow, this is a hot mess with a lot of great talent in it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I think a hot mess is a good review of it. I saw one that I read that I liked that said, entertainingly bad.
Well, I mean, it falls into a class of movie, and I can't think of many others. I was trying to think of these in the shower this morning. That it's one of those I want to like. I really, really want to like this movie. Yes. And I've watched it now four times probably and still can't make myself like it. The one that I could think of, another one is very similar, is Life Force, that Tobe Hooper movie. I wanted to like it.
Yep.
Couldn't like it.
That is a great key, actually. That's a really good comparison to mm-hmm. style and structure and hype and everything else.
And both and horror then, and sci-fi. Yeah. Yeah. So, I guess we just need to break it down a little bit as to why this movie doesn't work.
I mean, scenes, were there scenes that you...
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. And most of them are effects-type scenes. The overall mechanism that looks like the thing from Contact that spins is very cool looking. It looks very modern, yet it looks ancient at the same time. Like the texture of it looks old.
And we can probably go there because that was an issue that I struggle with. The gateway machine. Mm-hmm. Well, the overall aesthetic design is like this neo-Gothic mm-hmm. kind of style. I mean, it's a spaceship with dark plating on all the walls, so everything mm-hmm. looks like, you know, old haunted house stone kind of thing, but it's metal with big rivets, everything very cyberpunky kind of feel, but spikes and mm-hmm. instead of lights embedded like you normally have, like in Alien and most science fiction things, they're like sconces on the wall that twinkle and flicker, almost like torchlight.
It's a haunted castle spaceship.
Yeah.
Yeah. It looks like a castle.
And lots of spikes, lots of angular things. There's not a lot of curves in this. Everything's mm-hmm. very angular looking, very, I guess, deco-y, kind of deco-gothic, might be a new word for it. But you were talking about scenes. I interrupted you. I'm sorry.
Well, I was trying to think of some other ones. I mean, that's really not a scene. That's just a part of the set.
That's like an aesthetic, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what scenes do stick out to me? Not a lot. No, not a lot. You tell me some of yours and remind me.
I would love to see more of the footage. Like, I put this picture up. That's obviously a screen grab
right.
from either the arrival before the after gravity is turned on or from the ship's log of the horror that happened when the previous crew all went nuts. Mm-hmm. So everybody knows the big deal about, in case you haven't watched this movie, why are you listening to us? But anyway, the big factor in this movie is for a propulsion system, they essentially have created an interior singularity. They've created a baby black hole that actually powers this entire ship. And when they turned it on and it powered up, it went somewhere else. And Sam Neill's character is the engineer who designed it. And that's why he's on board this mm-hmm. rescue vessel. And it turns out that it obviously went to hell and came back.
Or the dimensional equivalent, yeah.
Correct. The dimensional hell where the crew actually went crazy, cannibalistic, orgiastic. And they recorded some of that, but we only get very, very small, brief glimpses of it. I saw in production notes that Paul Anderson actually filmed those scenes like over a 3-day weekend kind of thing, and that when he finally showed it to the studio, they had never seen any of the footage before. And that's kind of why they went, you need to be cutting this thing down. Because evidently it was pretty gory, pretty horrific, and you can tell just from some of the imagery that it probably went there. It was, you know, a really bad, bad devil trip or evilness, whatever. I don't know.
Well, very, very bad ratings trip. They knew it was not going to get past the censors, I'm sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But so everybody went to hell. They came back. But that's some of my... I would love to see some more of that footage and see how drastic he did it. I think editing it as fast as he did was actually one of the highlights of the movie. It actually made me intrigued and scared. I was going, based on those three images that kind of seared in my brain, I don't need to see the rest of that. That's going to be little much. I liked that scene. I liked the scene where Quinlan's character, and that's how bad this movie is. I don't remember a lot of the names because they weren't good.
You remember them by their celebrity name.
I remember them by the celebrity Quinlan actor name.
Peters.
Not the character names, mm-hmm. which normally I'm a very character-centric sort of person. So there's that. The scene where she is in the med bay, the dark, dank, awful med bay, and starts hearing the scratching. And she goes to look, and it's something is in the tent on the med bay table. And everything.
That was definitely a good scene. Yeah, I remember that one very well. I won't say it because that's a key now that I think about it.
I think Sam Neill's reveal back in the command and in the command bridge of the ship when he's ripped his own eyes out mm-hmm. was a good reveal, but so much of this movie, A, doesn't make plausible sense, but B, doesn't work from a scare level. It's not paced right. There's a sense of dread. I give him that. From the very beginning, Sam Neill's nightmare at the beginning. It's one of those nightmare at the beginning as a hook. Then we go into the story. Then they're there. And there's a lot of dread buildup, but there's no dread payoff. It's a one-off horror story of hunting them, of unexplanation, I guess, would be a way of putting it, maybe. Does that make sense?
It does. I'm trying to... Sorry, I'm digressing, but who is Wes Anderson? Because I know Paul Anderson, who directed this movie, and Paul Thomas Anderson, who directed Boogie Nights. Is there a Wes Anderson? Because you mentioned that.
There was a Wes Anderson. Let's digress and look him up real quick.
He's
a director. I'm just looking it up. Fantastic Mr. Fox. Royal Tannenbaums.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, so then we actually have three people. Okay, I just want to make sure neither one of these were Wes Anderson, because Paul Anderson's middle initials are WS.
Correct. That's why I get them confused a lot. Yes.
Okay.
But now, he has gone on and done other stuff, but it's none of it's good. Like, okay, this is the guy that brought you Resident Evil.
And Alien versus Predator. It's not Paul Thomas Anderson, who I think got noticed with Boogie Nights and has gone on to do several very avant-garde type artsy films that get award notice. This guy's more of an action movie director.
And thinks he can do science fiction, but really can't. Or horror.
We're talking about there's a lot of reasons why this doesn't work. One of the reasons, I think, is the screenplay. And you've already mentioned that it cliched open with the bad dream and all that stuff. It's written by a guy named Philip Eisner. He's not done anything else, hardly. He's done four things total and nothing of note other than this.
Yeah, and evidently he was a kind of friend of Paul, or something like that.
Friends like that. Who needs enemies?
The screenplay was weak to begin with. The character development is terrible because it is so cliche. Mm-hmm. The only person that really shines in it, you've already said, which is Lawrence Fishburne.
Yeah.
And he's trying his best with what he has.
Even floating around in his ridiculous chair.
Yes. Which isn't a bad design, I mean, when you think about it, but it only makes sense if you don't have gravity, and they do have gravity. Mm-hmm. To have a strap-in chair that's actually on some kind of gimbal that can move around so the captain has full access, that's great if you're weightless. But if you have gravity, then why wouldn't you just put a swivel in the floor? Makes no sense. I like Jolie Richardson. I like her character. I thought she was great. I've always liked her. I was glad she became Final Girl, sort of thing. But, this could have been so dynamic with the topics that they were trying to embrace of cosmic evil and an existential look at evil is a dimension that is actually there that maybe you can access if you're a ghost on Earth, or if you have a quantum drive and you can go into another dimension to a black hole or whatever. They could have gotten so much deeper.
A puzzle box and your name's Clive Barker.
Sort of thing, yes.
Yeah.
We'll definitely get to every case.
Well, why didn't they consult him? Why didn't they bring him on, you know, if they're going to go there?
He would have been perfect for this. Yeah. He would have been perfect for this whole time. Everything they're going here would have been great. But, I mean, I have so my watch notes for this were like so long of, oh, my gosh, this is just bad. You know, my first watch note is, okay, so it's a bad dream cliche with written exposition voiceover. And then we have straight razors in 2047. Why would we have straight razors in 2047? Other than the fact that everybody is afraid of straight razors.
He's an old fashioned guy.
I guess so, but he's not. He never shows that in any other indication.
Well, I was wondering, back when we were talking about that it's such a flawed movie with such a stellar cast, what attracted to them? What made them sign on to this?
Good question. Could it have been possibly hype? Could they have said, hey, this is going to be the new Alien?
Maybe. Sort of thing. Or this is Hellraiser in space.
Hellraiser in space works, you know. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm just I don't get it. And I did you know this is, before we move away and start talking about cast, did you know that this Paul W.S. Anderson that directed this was coming off of Mortal Kombat, which was apparently a big hit. I didn't see it. And do you know what he turned down in order to make this film?
I read it, but I didn't put it in my notes.
He turned down the first X-Men movie.
Yes.
And he turned down the X-Files movie. And he turned down Alien Resurrection, which is not so great. But anyway, he turned down three major franchises. Well, maybe one minor franchise, but yeah.
Well, and, you know, truth be told, it would be interesting, had the footage survived, which if you go and research this, you find out that all the footage that he cut, like 40 minutes that he had to cut out of it or whatever.
Which is why it doesn't make any sense.
Ended up not being well preserved, not taken care of, and most of it's missing kind of thing. There are a few deleted scenes you can find, that kind of thing, but most of it's gone. I would be interested in seeing his full vision as he had originally intended it. However, based on every single freaking Resident Evil movie that he has written and directed, I don't think I would like it because I don't like any of them. And by the way, that's his wife, by the way. Mila Jovovich is his wife.
Oh, I didn't know that. Well, that makes another franchise, and I didn't even play that game, but it has zombies in it, so that's another one of those that I really want to like, and every time I've seen it, I hate it.
Resident Evil?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And so, let's throw logic out the window and have this incredible action sequence shot just because we think it looks cool.
That's James Cameron, isn't it? No.
Yeah, well, and that's also, that happened in the 2000s and the 10s. All of the Terminator movies and all of that, where we don't care about physics anymore. We just care about how cool this looks. And we can do it in a computer now, so it's really cool. But, you know, this one had some great miniature work. I loved the ships in it. I thought they looked cool. The designs were kind of interesting.
I think the effects and everything looked great, except at the beginning when you see the stuff floating through the ship.
I was just bad compositing in all of that. Really bad stuff.
But aesthetics-wise, it's pretty, for even though it's a gothic look, it's still a really pretty film, I think, some of it.
Pretty? I
don't know. Well, in my world.
Maybe in your world, it was dark and pretty. Oh, wait, I have a pretty picture.
I mean, that picture behind you is pretty, the way it's lit.
Okay, yeah. There's that. Well, it is. It's lit. The lighting works for this. I thought it was well It was well designed in places.
We just put up the same picture. That's hilarious.
Yeah, the grinder.
Yeah.
So the meat grinder sequence. The eye rips like this were not well done, I don't think, makeup-wise, and looked very abrupt and didn't look real. They were trying to give the hollow effect of no eyes going into the head, but that would mean you also have no brain or nothing else in there if it's hollow.
Well, if it's dark, it should be darker.
Well, yeah.
And you wouldn't see it.
But, I mean, as far as losing your eye, I would much rather their eyes have been white than...
like sockets. Evil Dad.
Yeah, that to me is scary and intrinsically scares me. So I wish they had done that approach before. Bad compositing, you mentioned that. Meat grinder.
Yeah, it's mainly when you see the empty ship in the beginning and like a book floats by or something floats by and it looks terrible. It just does not look real. It looks so fake. I was like, why can this movie look so good and have such bad opticals in one scene?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's because he was rushed. I think that's because the studio came to him and said, look, I know you normally have 3 months to edit this. You've got 4 weeks.
Yeah, well, you know whose fault that is, right?
That's James Cameron.
James Cameron. Exactly. They were wanting to push back the release of Titanic for him and rush this one.
You're right. I said earlier Avatar. It's not Avatar. It's Titanic.
It's Titanic.
They pushed Titanic back. Yeah.
No, because it was 97.
Yeah.
So they pushed it back to like Christmas and rushed this to be a summer release, if I think I have that right. And this was actually supposed to be the one that came out closer to Christmas. So he got the raw end of the deal. But it also could be that the production company said, or the studio said, hey, this film sucks. Let's just go ahead and rush it out and give Jimmy some more time.
Yeah.
They could have. I mean, we don't know what was going on in their heads. They may have already known they had a turkey on their hands.
True. That may have been true. And just let, Anderson take the fall for it.
Right.
Sort of thing. I mean, I'm glad that most of the careers didn't suffer, and most of them have gone, as far as the performers, and they've gone on to do, the actors, performers, and they've gone on to do great work, whether it's Matrix or
Star Trek. Well, I was going to say, what do you think was going through Sam Neill's head? I mean, he was coming away from Jurassic Park and into this. And then, of course, Lawrence Fishburne went from this and into The Matrix. So they both had their own really good franchises as well. Well,
Sam Neill, to me, is kind of like Michael Caine. He is...
Give me the check.
He has this... Yeah, sometimes he does it for the check, and sometimes he does... he was Damien, remember?
He was. But that was before anybody knew him, though.
Right. But he also has some really good stuff in his repertoire, sort of thing. And I think he's a good actor. I think he really tries and strives to make the characters that he plays real. I think it was difficult in this one because the screenplay didn't help him at all. His conversion to insane, crazy demon guy was really abrupt and didn't really function, I think, really well. So I think he was trying, but struggling.
Yeah, and you could see it with Lawrence Fishburne too. He's using his authority as military to try to cover up any lack of writing.
Of writing and motivation or anything, yes.
And he's very good at it. I was like, God, he's charismatic because, I mean, that's why he's Morbius or whatever his name is from The Matrix, because even with a bad script, he can command the screen.
Right.
Well,
and I've got moments in this that obviously either the rapid cuts that they had to do and the rapid editing time frame they had affected it just because it's pacing. This movie, as I said before, relies more on jump scares than it does on horror to me or scary. It makes no logical sense in a lot of places from a timing perspective. Like the Sam Neill doctor character has now gone crazy. And he eviscerates a guy on a table in like 90 seconds.
Yeah.
You know, because people are literally running to his location.
And we've established
they are running as he starts. And by the time they get there, he's gone and the body is literally hung up and cut into pieces.
Yeah.
And it's like, and did we miss a scene in there somewhere?
The Jason Isaacs character.
Yes.
Which is funny. I had to look up his name because I couldn't remember his character name, you said. But it's like he – and then I thought, well, okay, maybe he has magical superpowers and just went and strung him up.
Right. Yeah, he's got demon dimensional powers or whatever.
Exactly.
But then other stuff just doesn't make sense to me from a you should have known this. If you were inadequate, and I think this goes back to the screenwriter, not to Anderson, but if you had known it, stuff like, we established they have artificial gravity because in the very first scene, Sam Neill is on what looks like the ISS. It's a space station in orbit of Earth that is very... you know, lots of lines and pods and girders and structures. So they would not have any form of gravity because nothing is spinning, so they can't create anything. So they obviously have artificial gravity. Yet there are times in this when the gravity doesn't work. They have magnetic boots until they turn the gravity on and stuff. Things are floating in bad composited shots.
I was going to ask you if the science was wonky. But I was leaning more toward the whole black hole being inside the spaceship thing.
Well, you can give them that. They have whatever these rotating rings are, some kind of containment field because this was not established till later. This is kind of a key. I'll jump to it as a key. In Deep Space Nine, the series of Star Trek, they established that the Romulan Star Empire uses quantum singularities for all of their power. So they use baby black holes just like this for all of their starships, all of their planetary power, everything is using small quantum drives. Mm-hmm. So it's theoretical that one goes. But then you do stuff like you establish that this ship is moored by this ship and they have this gangway that goes across. You even have this entire action sequence with dude wanting to commit suicide when he's possessed. And they have to race to get to him in time in the spacesuit and save him and yada yada. So this is not a sealed tunnel. It's just a gangway that they can get between ships, right? Mm-hmm. Yet Sam Neill, when he goes crazy, is on the other ship. The engineer guy, Sean or whoever, goes down, sees him. He's not in a spacesuit. And yet a few seconds later, they blow up the ship. And he's obviously come from this ship.
That side of the ship, yeah.
How did you get outside without a spaceship? And then later on, when they have, what's his name?
Cooper.
Who ends up living?
Cooper. He's the weakest link.
He comes into the airlock, and the next scene, and the countdown has started to ignition of the quantum drive. So they have that long to destroy this freaking tunnel and get to safety and all of, you know, the big action piece at the end. Yet he's in a full spacesuit, and the very next scene, it's Fishburne, him, and the Jolie character walking through without him in the suit talking. And the countdown has only lost 90 seconds. So they got him totally out of the suit and moved locations in 90 seconds. I went, no, it's just... we're missing scenes or something. Is not the pacing is really weird, in my opinion.
What do you think about when I can't remember? Oh, it's the Pertwee character. Sean Pertwee's character opens that thing, and it's the countdown, and it just says 5, 4, 3.
Yeah,
I was like, that's a Wile E. Coyote moment.
That is so, yes, very true. Very true.
Oh, I didn't even think about Warner Brothers cartoons as a key, but that's funny.
Well, and like, you know, the scene right there with, just the whole decompression scene. It is decompressing enough with enough force and enough power to rip Sam Neill and his entire chair out of the ground. Yet two other people in the same room just hold on. And he can pull her, not only just hold on, he can pull her into another room and close the doors.
You can cling to grate in the floor that will bend up while you're clinging to it. And I'm like, and your fingers are still on your hand?
Right. Bends the entire girder up and everything else, yet other people are just holding on, and you're not losing arms and stuff.
No, I mean, that the key to that, the biggest key to that is another Cameron movie, and it's Aliens. You know, the reason that Aliens pisses me off at the very end is her surviving that airlock open.
Yeah, my note is decompression scene. I don't even want to talk about it.
Oh, you're talking about when the first young guy's in there and he's
the scene where you're talking about where Sam Neill's grabbing hold of the girder and it's pulling.
Let's talk about the other bad scene.
Oh my god!
Because I was like, there's no way that guy. Oh, he's okay. We've got him in a tube. He's not going to look very good, but he's fine. I'm like, no, he is not fine.
He'll have no eyes, and he would not be fine. He would have cerebral hemorrhages everywhere.
Yeah, that was crazy. That was actually, I did like that scene, though, when you asked me about scenes earlier, because he's out there, and it's when he realizes what he's done, and he can't reverse it. You're like, yes. Holy shit, that's horrible.
Yeah, that was good when it was kind of like the entity left him kind of thing. Yes. It was the feeling. Because they also
want him to realize it.
They also hint at that and don't explain it, which is her bio readings show the entire ship. So you're given the strong implication that what they brought back was some living life force that is now essentially the ship is an alien entity or a demonic entity or whatever. Yet they don't go enough into that and why it would suddenly possess somebody enough to do something, but then let them go and then not and then do, you know.
So do you think they did a little interdimensional redecorating and that's why the ship looks like a castle?
Yeah. See, I would have liked that better. If when Neil's character walked in went, this is nothing like the
design. Oh, yeah, they could have played it up.
That would have been creepy and cool. And that's why they're exploring, you know, and like show an image of like that tunnel behind me, the what they call the meat grinder tunnel. Show it normal with like just a thing, but then now show it now and how it's changed and mutated.
Yeah.
The same thing. The original design for the drive, which is this interlocking two circles around a sphere.
Very contact.
Was supposed to be just like, yeah, very contact influence. That's a key I had. But it was originally designed as just a black orb. So it was just a black oily orb. Okay. And that was it. And it kind of floated there on its own power. And that's how but they came up with the idea for these rings and everything else. So why not use both ideas? Have it originally be this orb. But when it comes back from Demon Land,
it's like suddenly this giant spiky and ball.
Yeah.
Yeah. Crazy.
That would have added to it, in my opinion. But there's so much. Again, like to your point, I think this has such potential, but they didn't do it, and they just took some real bad liberties.
We need Jonah Nolan and his wife to read this.
No. give this to Flanagan, and at least it would have more character.
I honestly was thinking about that while I was watching it. It's like, if a movie needs to be remade, remake this.
Yeah. And Flanagan, I think, could do it because he's good at gore, too. Mm-hmm. So he's good at gore character development mostly and character. You know, I love it kind of became a cliche in horror tropes, but that kind of, one of my keys is Hill House, in that you have these people that have backstories that are haunting them.
Right.
And put into this atmosphere. So like the Kathleen Quinlan character, she's the guilty mom. She has guilty mom syndrome because she's having to do all this and she's leaving her kid. So naturally the entity uses the kid. You know, we never find out, but the Neil character he's haunted by his wife and her death, and somehow he contributed to it.
And they show a scene where she steps into a tub. I think it's that scene that's on my left.
So evidently he was so pre-obsessed with his work that she committed suicide, and he feels guilt over that. And then Fishburne's character has survivor guilt because he let the guys burn.
Oh, yeah, he saw a guy burn alive or whatever, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So those cliches could have been fleshed out more and told more.
And probably were.
Maybe have been, because, I mean, they have the scene where he goes, he knew what I was afraid of. Mm-hmm. you know, or it knew what I was afraid of. It said things. And the Isaacs character says, well, I've known you all these years. You never told me that, because I've never told anyone.
That's a great scene right there. That adds a lot of depth to this movie. And it's just one instance in the movie, of course, that survived. And it's when he said, I've never told anybody that. That the only thing that knew it was this ship.
Right. And that would have fleshed
that
out.
So it means his subconscious is manifesting into some kind of evil entity or whatever. And that's very deep. And it's a very good marriage of horror and sci-fi, but they just failed at it. I mean, that's why I guess I want this movie to be so damn good. And it's because it's got moments of greatness. And too many that are just not.
Yeah, I'm the same way. So, I wanted it to be much better than it was.
Well, speaking of the greatness, I mean, we can talk a little bit about the cast. The cast is great. I don't have too terribly much about it, about like alternates or anything, but I will say that originally set to star in this film, I guess before Sam Neill, was Jeremy Irons. And Amy Brenneman, who I'm not sure who she would have been.
She would have probably been the doctor, the Kathleen Quinlan.
The Quinlan character. Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
I would assume.
Yeah. Lawrence Fishburne got top billing as agent or Sergeant Miller. Do you know who else was considered for this role?
No.
Just think about the time period, basically. Arnold Schwarzenegger. Tommy Lee Jones. Tommy even could smell a turd like this, I'm sure, because that's why.
Yeah, he would have not. No.
Of course, he did do Volcano. And then Bruce Willis. So they were all considered for this role that Fishburne accepted. And all I can say is maybe the reason he's in the Matrix is because he did this, and maybe that's a good thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
As far as Sam Neill's character, who plays Dr. Weir, two other people turned down the role. So it was offered to Scott Glenn, who I love from Silence of the Lambs. And I've actually been watching him in Daredevil. He's on that show as well.
He's the old mentor.
The blind mentor. The kung fu type mentor. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then also Bill Pullman turned down this role, obviously to probably do Independence Day.
Yeah, hopefully to do Independence Day. Well, yes.
That's all I have as far as alternates. You mentioned Kathleen Quinlan. She's great. We've seen her in a million things. Jolie Richardson is not only great and in a lot of roles, she's royalty. Isn't she part of the Red Gray family?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So she's acting royalty. The rest of the billing confuses me, because the next one billed is Cooper, Richard T. Jones, and I think he's one of the worst things in the movie.
I do too, but in a lot of reviews and doing research on this, people mention him and say they loved his lines and they thought he was good comic relief. And I went, no, he's terrible.
No,
and his character makes no sense. There's no reason for him to be so good at this. And
I'm the savior or whatever,
and so bad at being a person, or handling fear in any way.
Right. And then next in billing was Jack Noseworthy, who played Justin, the guy who implodes with the decompression. He's not that great. I mean, I recognize him, but why does Richard T. Jones and Jack Noseworthy get billing over Jason Isaac and Sean Pertwee? I mean,
I don't know.
I don't either. I guess it's because they were both just coming on the scene at the time. But I mean, Jason Isaacs is huge. I mean, he's fantastic. And then Sean is at least one of those character actors you see in everything. So I'm not really sure why those other guys got higher billing.
Okay.
Jason, you know, of course, did your movies. What do they call them? Harry Potter.
Yes. They played Lucius Malfoy, one of my favorite characters.
Yeah. So. And then the only thing else left is, you know, the woman that played his wife that committed suicide, the man that burned, I mean, which are all just people I've never heard of. That's really all I have as far as cast. As far as awards, you will be happy to know this film won one.
Oh, no, what?
The Brussels International Festival of Fantasy Film in 1998 gave it the Pegasus Audience Award for director Paul W.S. Anderson. Maybe they saw the original cut.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. But even Fangoria just nominated Sam Neill. They didn't give him anything. And then the International Horror Guild also nominated it for Best Film. Don't know what that is. So, and it is not on the 1001 movies you must see before you die, even though I've seen it four times. So...
Well, I did find on IMDb they have a list of the deleted scenes.
So you guys should
go there and look it up. I thought some of them were interesting, like DJ, who didn't have a backstory for us. His backstory was he had an operation when he was a child, and he has a scar on his chest, and that's why he gets eviscerated. So they do try to tie their backstories into the terror of it.
Okay.
And there's a pretty detailed thing about the what they call the blood orgy or the bloody orgy, mm-hmm. which was the previous stuff, the stuff he shot that weekend. And he actually hired amputee actors to play the people so he could rip limbs off.
Oh, wow.
And tear stuff off and have people eat through stuff. A very, I guess, George Miller-y, I mean, or a Romero-y kind of thing to do, maybe. So... but yeah, there's a lengthy list of the cuts and edits that were made and everything else. So you guys can look that up on IMDb.
Yeah, you can look it up on IMDb. And also there are three different endings in that list as well that were filmed. And one of them, of course, was the one that was used with probably the jump scare. Well, yeah, obviously with the jump scare. It's when they...
Well, but I like that it's a jump scare that turns out not to be a scare. Mm-hmm. Not to be founded, because it's basically, you know, him waking up from cryo kind
correct.
Of thing.
And he wakes up very similar.
Or she wakes up from cryo.
It's her. Sorry, you're right.
Yeah.
Wakes up very similarly to the nightmare that Sam Neill has in the beginning as well.
Right.
Sort of gives it a little bit of a literary cohesion or unity. So, yeah, you can look all that stuff up on IMDb if you want. I am not going to read it because it is way... too much. There is one little bit of trivia though that I was going to mention that I thought was interesting, and I'll just read this verbatim. Although the film met with mostly negative reviews and a disappointing box office result at the time of its release, it amassed a considerable cult following over the years. Director Paul W.S. Anderson said that the movie's cult status was predicted to him years before by Kurt Russell. And Anderson screened Event Horizon before they started work on Soldier in 1998. And Russell said... And I quote, Kurt Russell said, "Forget about what this movie's doing now. In 15 years' time, this is going to be the movie you're glad you made." I know he meant it well. He meant well with saying that, but it's not true, really.
No.
Not in this case.
And actually, Soldier is a much better movie than this.
I couldn't watch it. I tried watching it when we were doing... some other podcast. I can't remember what it's related to, but
yeah,
it was Blade Runner, I think.
Blade Runner.
Yeah.
Yep. Same time period, supposedly.
But for those of you that are, you know, Dave and I are glossing over it. For those of you that don't know, Kurt Russell's obviously talking about The Thing, because when The Thing came out, it tanked and it ended up being this huge monumental horror science fiction movie. And Kurt was kind of saying, you know what, your Event Horizon is going to do the same. And it really didn't, but he was being nice. So,
Being nice, I assume. Yeah. I mean, it hasn't and doesn't deserve to be the same. No. The Thing is so well done compared to this. But
right.
Anyway.
And that leaves us with keys.
Some keys. I have quite a few, actually.
A lot of horror keys.
What do you got? You start.
Well, we already mentioned Hellraiser.
Mm-hmm.
But I would also mention, and this is another one of those movies that I really, really want to like. I actually do kind of like it better than this film. And that's Prince of Darkness, the John Carpenter movie with Donald Pleasance.
Again, existential evil.
Yeah, exactly. You know, liquid evil in a vat or whatever from another dimension. But the thing in particular, I mean, that alone is a key, but there is a visual key, and I have a lot of visual keys from other films, is when she puts her hand, or he, I can't remember who does it, into the water and goes into another dimension. That's how that happens, literally, with a mirror in Prince of Darkness and in Evil Dead. I mean, so we've seen that in two major horror movies.
That's the young kid. That's how he goes crazy, because he's pulled into the quantum drive.
Right. It's the young guy before he goes through the decompression scene. Yes, it's that guy at the very beginning. So that's three right there. Hellraiser, Prince of Darkness, and Evil Dead.
Okay, and I've got Hellraiser because of demons and gore, of course, and especially the log entries with all the that strange cannibalistic, orgiastic, bloody, you know, stuff, and the what you said earlier, the puzzle box, the, you know, this is a we'll show you such stuff as dreams, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. We've mentioned Alien. I've got four different references keys to Alien. The using those empty shots of the spaceship at the beginning is very Alien to start. Mm-hmm. You know, just those slow pans of the ship all being empty and everything. The haunted house in space, which is the Alien gag. Mm-hmm. The disgruntled crew. You know, you wake everybody up from cryo and they're all bitching and moaning and making fun of each other and unhappy and all that. And then even down to the shot when she's trying to escape, the Kathleen Quinlan character, she... reaches, it shows the
hatch, and I have
she reaches
that.
Up the ladder and raises up. I went, oh my God, that's freaking Ripley.
It's the same fucking shot. I think we may have just hit the nail on the head of why this movie doesn't work, is that it's cliche after cliche. And I mentioned shot keys, and that's one of them. That and the mirror water thing that I just mentioned. But you mentioned Alien as far as the military being disgruntled, but I mention aliens because it's the military, and that's, you know, it's a military science operation, and that's what this film is as well.
And they wake up and, you know, and grumble and bitch at each other and everything else.
And they all have their little, you know, quirks.
So I've got Alien, Hellraiser as well. I've also got The Shining, of course, for obvious reasons. You know, you have this, these characters are thrust into an environment which could be haunted, and it ends up bringing out their own fears and everything
else. But as far as cliche, The Shining, because there's a wave of blood that comes washing down over them.
Yep.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. There's so many visual cliches in this movie to other horror movies.
And this is Hill House and Haunting, both. You know, it is that these people are bringing their own baggage and backstories of guilt that are now being manifested and played upon by the evil in the environment. Kind of thing.
Right.
So it's that same kind of thing as her bringing her, is she really crazy or not, kind of attitude, like The Shining.
Mm-hmm. As far as another visual, there's a scene where Sam Neill's character, Weir, says, let me show you, I guess.
How a quantum drive works.
And, what the other dimension is. And it's basically, I guess, that weekend's footage that Anderson did, edited down to about 10 seconds. So it's just rapid cut of like gore and depravity and or what have you. It's very Ken Russell. Mm-hmm. And it's very Exorcist because you know how they would flash the demon in Exorcist to just give you that subliminal image or what have you.
Yep. That's a great one.
Yes.
I thought you were going to do the Interstellar reference, which is to explain to you how Drive works. I'm going to fold a piece of paper and I'm going to put a pencil through it. Right. So that's exactly that Interstellar reference of
And we
of
mentioned how it when we covered space. It. Yeah, yeah, we did because he
earlier this season. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sure did.
You were talking about visuals. So I've got a few visuals. One is, of course, Hieronymus Bosch, all of his paintings, which are, you know, demon orgies and very, very graphic sort of imagery that he did in all of his paintings. Anderson has even said that was an influence on, how he interpreted those scenes. The designer has said that the influence for the design that we keep talking about, this kind of noir deco-y kind of stuff, was Notre Dame Cathedral.
All the buttresses does look like that.
And the curves and the spikes mm-hmm. and all of that were that. And then another design element was they call the tunnel a meat grinder. The tunnel that's the access. And Robert Gordon, who wrote Galaxy Quest, mm-hmm. said that that's exactly what he was referencing when they turn around and it's all the
things
chompers.
That will smash you. Yeah.
Yes, as she calls them, the chompers. And she even says, this episode was badly written.
Right. Right. So, I thought about that as well.
Yeah.
Another cliched visual is the scene that you said you liked. When she sees the tent and something clawing at the tent, that's right out of The Sixth Sense.
Mm-hmm.
When, you know, the little boy, I can't think of his name now, goes into the tent because the ghost is of that girl's in there. Ugh, that scares the fuck out of me.
And
every
she's
time.
In there anyway. Yeah, don't like that. No.
So
that was a good one.
What else? I mean, Clive Barker in general. I mean, we mentioned Hellraiser, but this whole movie has a very Barker-esque vibe to it.
And a Lovecraftian vibe. We've said that. Both of those kind of feel to it. I saw in some comparison people mentioning Ghost Ship. Same kind of thing where the exploration, the rescue vessel finds an empty ship and it turns out that the ship is haunted and they're each killed and picked off one by one.
That's a movie?
Yeah. It's called Ghost Ship.
One word or two?
No, two words.
When did that come out? Do you know?
I don't know. 90s? I have to look it up.
I mean, it's no big deal. I'll look it up. I just didn't know what it was.
One that got me was 2010, which we also covered
earlier
on the podcast. And you've got, I mean, think about it. You've got this scientist who is approached saying something is near a distant planet in our solar system, and we've got to get you out there right now to explore it. So he goes out there, and then they even have the whole ships beside each other that have to slowly match in rotation in order to dock and come together, and then they're docked by the little bridge that holds it. And then halfway through, near the end, we've got to blow that up.
Oh yeah, that is a lot. So, it's funny that you mentioned that because every year when we do a season, or every time we do a season,
mm-hmm.
all the movies seem to end up being connected somehow.
Yeah, they start linking.
And this season has been really strong with connections. I'm starting to realize that. I need to make a list of them for like Christmas or something.
Oh yeah, for like a special bonus.
Right, I mean, we already mentioned that Michael Redgrave was in two horrors, mm-hmm. and that's unusual. But there were others too, like you mentioned this with 2010.
Yeah.
So...
And it's a very low note for me in my last one, but it's Black Hole, you know, the Disney movie, because it's basically saying the same thing. They didn't use it as an engine, but it became a focal point of the movie in that they're circling a black hole.
Because it's a black hole. It's Black Hole, David. There's black hole in this movie. There's black hole in that movie. So they are connected.
There you go. They're connected.
I think I used that same argument in Interstellar, didn't I?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure. Same thing. Interstellar is a black hole. Yeah.
Oh, how funny. All right. Well, speaking of which, I did have the Interstellar reference and the Galaxy Quest reference.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that there's a series being developed based on this?
Well, I hope they take the ideas that we talked about here.
I agree.
And use those. Because, again, I think we both want to see this be successful and wish it could have been. It might be better as a series because then we could at least get a little bit more of the backstory of not only the characters, but hopefully of the dimension itself and why.
Well, I was going to let you be surprised, but it is being adapted by Jonah Nolan and his wife for HBO. It's one of those three we were talking about.
Nuh-uh. Really? No, you're lying. They wouldn't touch this. They wouldn't touch
this
story.
But I have a great poker face. My mama poked the face.
That was good. Dang. There was a moment of hope there, and then it was crushed when the existential dread came back.
Actually, I do have who's doing it. It's somebody named Adam Wingard. Do you know who that is?
No.
Do not know that name. Let me look him up. He did Godzilla vs. Kong. He did VHS. He did Your Next. And he did The Guest with our friend from Downton Abbey. I can't think of his name. So he's done some pretty big movies. We'll see what happens. I mean, so had What's-His-Face that did this, and look where it got him. So,
and for your records, Ghost Ship came out in 2002.
Okay. Yeah, I will add that to our list of show links. Other things I have, well, I mentioned that there is no release date as of yet with this series, but apparently something could potentially be in development, and I would love it if they redid like a 10-episode season and made this good somehow with the backstory, like Hill House.
Again, like our point, talking about, you know, Hill House or Midnight Mass or any of the Flanagans, kind of Netflix-y thing. Yeah.
I've got that. This is lifted from IMDb. This film became a cult hit among different media and even inspired games, including Dead Space.
Okay. Which is scarier than this movie, by the way. Dead Space, actually, because there are so many sequences. Because I played that game, and I think it's got...
Obviously.
I think there's two prequels or sequels to it. But anyway, there's entire sequences where you're just in your spacesuit, and you're having to look around with just like that flashlight kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it's scary as hell. It's good. It's good.
And then there's something called Doom 3.
Okay, then.
And that's obviously...
Maybe Doom 3 takes place in space?
Yeah.
I guess.
Maybe so. What else do we have?
That is all of my keys.
I've got when Cooper activates his jetpack to get back to the event horizon, Purge appears in the control. It's a nod to Blade Runner. Since then, in the spinner screen used by Deckard and Guff, Purge appears when they fly by.
Okay.
I mean, big deal. I mean, there's enough visual keys in this movie that did we have to attach Blade Runner to it as well?
Right. Yep.
That's hilarious. And then I think that's it. You mentioned Black Hole 2010. Yeah, I think I've done it. I think we're through it. I think there are no keys left.
Right, there are no keys to the murky darkness of evil coming out of the... I'm sorry, if I saw, you know, like that image behind me, if that was my opposite POV and that was that meat grinder turning and then you saw that little spinny wheel at the end of it with the black oily stuff, I'd say, hell no. Mm-hmm. I'll be back up here in the command console and you guys come and see me.
Well, like when...
I'm not...
Kathleen Quinlan turns. I'm like, don't turn, bitch. Keep going.
Yeah.
And then she turns and she sees the little boy run by at the end of the tunnel. And I was like, he's not there. You know he's not there.
And that's kind of something that needed to be explained for me from a character perspective, too. I mean, once you get into hallucinations and stuff, if the hallucination makes sense, I can buy it. And there are movies that do that well, that do that kind of where I thought I was in the moment and no, I woke up from a dream, or oh, no, it wasn't really there. Nobody's really there. But if you're in orbit of Uranus on a spaceship and your little boy goes running down the corridor, that's not real. I'm just saying, not real. No matter how much you want it to be, not real. You know, if you're climbing in the glowy green corridor, which made no sense either, but you're climbing in the glowy green corridor and your wife with no eyes shows up, that's not real. She committed suicide. I don't think she plucked her own eyes out. Anyway, probably not happening.
Oh, my God. We would like to thank you for joining us today. Yes. I think we could easily say that both of us really want this movie to be good. There's so many elements of this movie that make you want it to be good, mainly the cast and mainly the visuals. But this, it's a stinker as far as a screenplay and as far as direction. And we cannot really recommend it. But we do hope that we recommend that it be remade, and that's rare. That is very rare.
Very rare. Very rare for us.
If you are listening to us out there in podcast land, we would love for you to leave a review, especially on iTunes. That helps us tremendously.
Yes, please.
You can
even also, a one word, just say, hey, loved it, or don't like it, or go with them, or these guys are good, or whatever.
Fucking amazing. If you're watching us on YouTube, please hit the subscribe button below and check out one of our other shows. We've got some short stuff out there with Coming Attractions on Coming to Get You, as well as if they haven't, they should have aired by now, Top Fives. We're starting to do some Top Fives, as well as I'm doing some of my Shudder shows that sometimes get some excised shorts from these shows, actually. And I guess that's going to, also, if this is not enough for you, because God knows who can get enough of us, you can always go over to Patreon, where we have some free bonus shows as well as some subscription content, including two shows that we've been working on Star Trek, the original series. We're in the second season of that show, and we've done two seasons of the original season, series of X-Files. God, could I ramble on and on and on some more?
Well, we would certainly appreciate you supporting Johnny Has the Keys and helping us do that. You know, if you become a Patreon, even for $1 a month, it helps us and helps us continue to do this. If you do like what you're hearing and seeing, you can also go to JohnnyHasTheKeys.com and see all of our past seasons.
Yeah, we even had a blog at one time where I used to write stuff.
Yeah, right.
And until – oh, by the way, this is our October Fright Fest, the fourth film in our sci-fi horror Fright Fest. Next week, David, is Halloween.
Ooh. We are airing science fiction?
Nope.
Okay.
But we are going to do a especially Halloween centric episode. Okay. I'll leave it at that, and I will see you then.
See you then.
Alrighty. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to Johnny Has the Keys. You can learn more about us at our website, johnnyhasthekeys.com, and our Facebook page. Avoid missing shows by subscribing on iTunes and Google Play, and please, please like, rate, and review us. We're doing this for genre geeks like ourselves, and we can't continue without your support. See you next show, and don't lose your keys.